This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home, and the air conditioning is definitely on today. I didn't even check to see what the temperature is outside. It feels like we're crowding 100. Oh, come on, 88. That is not right. There is no way it's 88 degrees out there. I must have my phone set for something else on my trip. Anyways, so this is episode, I can't remember, 122, I think. 122. I'm pretty sure it's 122. Oh, a little excitement going on here. Yes, I just set my phone back to where it's supposed to be, and it is 100 degrees outside. So I was thinking, man, it's got to be hotter than 88. It's probably 88 in Flagstaff, Arizona, which I'll tell you about here in a little bit. Oh, cool scooter. Some guy's got like a three-wheel trike scooter. That's pretty cool. Safer than the normal little scooters. Anyways, so it's been a good week. It has been a long, exciting, did lots of stuff week. Most of my did lots of stuff, of course, happened earlier. Charles did pick me up from the airport shortly after I had finished up the podcast. I think we took out of Springfield sometime around 4-ish, sometime around there. We got on the road, headed to Joplin. We did take a detour through Joplin because Charles had not seen the actual damage on the tornado, and so it's something to see. So we took a little detour through there, and then we got on the road and just started driving. And Thursday we drove all the way through Oklahoma and part of the way through the panhandle on Texas, and did make it to Amarillo. When we got to Amarillo, we had a little more difficulty finding a hotel room than we were expecting because there was a Jehovah's Witness convention in Amarillo, and all the hotel rooms mostly were booked. And so I resorted to my normal tactic that when I call up a place and they say, no, we can't, blah, 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 then what you do is you just turn the tables around a little bit and you say, I see, well, we were looking for a room. Would you have any suggestions for who we might call? And we bounced a couple of times. I think bounced once with that. And then we did get a good suggestion. There was a new Holiday Inn Express that had just opened 2 weeks before. So called them up. It was a little more expensive than I thought I was going to be paying for the hotel rooms, but that's okay. Was in a good part of town since Charles had all of his stuff in his car. I wanted us to be parking in a good part of town so that we could rest a little easier. I think we were in Amarillo about 1 a.m. in the morning. That particular hotel, the breakfast, they serve breakfast till 9 o'clock. We had talked and we thought, well, we'll get up, we'll get down to breakfast, then we'll come back, get showers, and try to be on the road 11-ish or so. We actually got on the road about 10:30. And so the next day then, we drove from Amarillo, Texas to Flagstaff, Arizona, which was about an 8-hour. It wasn't too bad. We did, that was the day. My son-in-law did have a little extra adventure for us to go on. He had a friend who had stopped along the road on Highway 40, Interstate 40, at mile marker 271, just before you get to mile marker 271. There's an abandoned adobe house on the north side of the road. So if you're going towards Flagstaff, it's just after the Petrified Forest. There's an abandoned adobe house there that he had some friends that back in 2008 actually went in there and left a message in there. So we stopped off. We did manage to find the message. And that particular message was written on a rock. We decided that instead of writing our messages on rocks, since we really didn't have Sharpies, which we didn't find the message till late, and we had already written our messages. So we just wrote them on a couple of pieces of paper and just wadded them up and stuffed them in there, which was interesting in a way because Charles had been to the Holy Land and he had been to the Wailing Wall, and he said in the Wailing Wall there's just a bunch of stuff stuffed everywhere, and so it had reminded him of that, even though we only had two pieces of paper. It reminded him of being at the Wailing Wall, the West Wall, and people sticking pieces of paper into the West Wall. So we left a couple of little notes and dated them. As I said, the other message was from 2008, so we dated ours from 2011. So it'll be interesting to see. Who knows? In the years to come, maybe, they'll still be there. And I just wrote a little note about what we were doing, and I think Charles wrote a little note about what he was doing. I didn't read his note. He didn't read mine. So I believe my son-in-law then, we did take some pictures and we did upload it to YouTube. So if you're listening to this and you want to go see the video on YouTube of the little Adobe house, you can do a search for Arizona space mile space marker space 271. So Arizona mile marker 271 with spaces between all the words. And we uploaded those videos. And so my son-in-law, I think, is going to take his youth group by there, and maybe they'll leave some notes as well. Who knows? We might get a national thing started leaving notes there. That was fun. That night, we went up to we were in Flagstaff, and everybody told us, oh, you need to go down and go to the historical district. So we thought, okay, we'll go to the historical district. We walked down there, and it was loaded with young people. I mean, they were everywhere. They looked like high schoolers to me, and I was glad to find out that they looked like high schoolers to Charles as well. We talked later about the fact that he said, it's hard to tell anymore whether they're college students or high schoolers. I said, I know, man. That is a sign that you are getting old. So that was fun. I pulled my normal trick. When I'm in those situations, we were looking around for some place to eat, and there were just a ton of places, and we really didn't know what was going on and who was there and why they were there and any of that kind of stuff. So I told Charles, I said, oh, okay, we need to find a local to talk to. And so I was walking past these two couples that were having a very animated conversation. As I walked past them, you know, I got pinged, like, they're the ones. I said, okay. I said, just a second, Charles. And so I just spun around, and as I'm apt to do, I just walked up, stood there beside some of them until the guy across from me looked up, kind of smiled and nodded, and he quit talking. They looked at me, and I said, how are you all this evening? I said, we have just driven in from Amarillo, Texas. And the lady right beside me looked up. She said, you're kidding. I said, nope. She said, we're from Amarillo. I said, well, there you go. So I said, I have two questions for you. I said, well, first of all, are you all locals? And they said, yes. And I said, well, here's my questions. Number one, does this happen every Friday night here in Flagstaff? And they said, yeah, it happens every Friday. I said, well, this is very cool. I said, number two, and I pointed back to a restaurant that was behind me. I said, is that a good place to eat? And they looked at it and they went, no. I said, okay, where would you suggest that we get something to eat? They said, what do you like? I said, I like salad. They said, okay, well, you could go up this alley here and turn left, and there's a little shop there. It's really good. And so thanked them very much. We went on our merry way. As we were walking down the alley, there was an older couple, and we were walking along beside them, and so we greeted them and looked like we were going to be walking with them for a time. And so I perked up again, and I said, so, are you all locals? And they said, yes. And I said, you really got a lot of people here on a Friday night. And they said, well, people are coming up from Phoenix because it's cooler in Flagstaff because it's in the mountains. So they're coming up from Phoenix. And they said, in addition, the local university is getting ready to start up. Huge university there in Flagstaff. I mean, it took up a significant portion of the town. That was interesting. And we said, well, we're just passing through, and we're just going to grab something to eat. We were told this is a good restaurant. They said, actually, that's where we're going to eat. We went, oh, okay. He said, yeah, just don't sit by us. But he was joking. I said, no, we won't do that. We've got plenty to talk about. So we sat down. We had a really nice meal. I had good salads. Charles had salmon. And so then we just wandered around town a little bit. We did see something that I don't think I've ever seen before, and you don't usually see in Springfield. There were packs of young people roving the streets. And we were wandering down this one street, and all of a sudden we hear this girl start yelling. I don't know what she was yelling about. She's mad. Stay away from my brother. I mean, she's really mad. And we look over, and the next thing you know, this girl has grabbed another girl by the hair and is slapping her and trying to throw her around, and they tumble down on the ground, and she flips this girl over, and this girl lands on her back on the concrete. This other girl gets on top of her and is punching her. And Charles and I just sat there and looked at it, and to show you how I'm not really in the whole social media thing yet, I had my camera in my hand. It has a setting for video, and we just sat there and watched it till somebody broke them up. We didn't even little flip the switch. Eventually someone went, hey, and came running across the street and, you know, pulled the two girls apart. I don't know what it says about me that I had absolutely no desire at all to go across the street and pull them apart. I guess I don't feel much like doing my civic duty. I suppose I should have, but there was just nothing in me that wanted to go over there and get involved in that mess. And neither was there anything that said, you should videotape this and put this on YouTube. You could get a lot of hits off this, which I didn't. But it's really, I put on my Facebook that night. I said, well, I'm in Flagstaff, Arizona. Finally had a good salad. Also saw a full-on girl-on-girl cat fight on a street corner. Slept well. Of course, that got a lot of comments. That was interesting. Next day, we took a quick trip up to the Grand Canyon because I had never seen it. Charles had, but he said, no, you need to go. So went up there, did a Good Morning Clara from there, and then tucked into Las Vegas. This was Saturday. We started out on Saturday. Tucked into Las Vegas. We hit Las Vegas about 5 p.m. We did have a side trip to the Hoover Dam. Very cool. Didn't take a tour or anything, but just took some pictures and saw some things. And then we got into Vegas, I think, about 5 o'clock local time, which, of course, is already 7 o'clock my time because Vegas is 2 hours to the west. I told Charles, I said, okay, as long as we're in Vegas, we have to go to Whole Foods. He had been to a Whole Foods in New York, but I said, no, man, we have to go to Whole Foods. So we got to Whole Foods. It's mammoth Whole Foods in Vegas, Whole Foods Market. And Charles, he was really impressed. And I said, well, I'm going to have salad. You can have whatever you want. So he ended up with salad. I mean, I had a huge salad in there. It was really good. It was really really good. By the time we got that all finished up and we're, you know, heading back into town, Charles had never been to Vegas, so I said, okay, well, we're going to do the whirlwind tour. Because I needed to be at the airport no later than 10:50 local time, and it was already 6 o'clock. So we had about 3.5 hours, 3 hours and 45 minutes. Charles had a place to stay. He had family there in Las Vegas, had a place to stay Saturday night. So basically, he was just going to drop me off at the airport. So we went, parked in the parking garage for the MGM, since that's free. And I thought, well, you need to see the lion. So we hoofed it out of the parking garage all the way across the MGM casino, which is a considerable hoof. Looked at the lions for, you know, 5-10 minutes, then hoofed it all the way back. got to the monorail. I got him a monorail ticket. We took the monorail up to the Bali. We hoofed it all the way through the Bali. We hoofed it across the street to the Bellagio. I wanted him to see the fountains. And then we were on the wrong side for the hotel check-in, and I wanted him to see the Chihuly Glass and the conservatory in the Bellagio. So we hoofed it all the way across the Bellagio down into the conservatory. He thought that was really cool. I wanted him to see the convention center in the back of the Bellagio, so we went back there, hoofed all the way back across the Bellagio again. You know, he was amazed at how big the convention center was just in the Bellagio. This isn't the Las Vegas Convention Center. This is just the convention rooms for the Bellagio. Hoofed it all the way back up to the front of the Bellagio. We cut across. I said, well, you've got to see Caesar's Palace. So we hoofed it over to Caesar's Palace. We went outside so we could see all the statues. And then we hoofed it down into Caesar's Palace and across through the marketplace forums, through the forums there, so he could see that. And eventually wended our way back out the other end of Caesar's Palace. And then we crossed the street and hoofed it up past the Imperial into the Venetian, because he wanted to see the canals. So we went all the way into the Venetian, into the canals, and then down into the center part of the Venetian, where they've got the big open area, the plaza there. We listened to some music there for a few minutes. And then he wanted to see the Wynn as well, because he had had a contest where he tried out for a free trip to the Wynn, so he kind of wanted to see what he had missed. So hoofed it up to the Wynn. My plan always being we'd hoof it out the back of the Wynn, catch the monorail, zip it right back home, no problem. Well, back to the MGM. Unfortunately, the Wynn does not have a monorail stop. So, and I had told Charles, I'd never been in the Wynn before, so I said, we're flying blind, but I said, as near as I can guess, if we look through the Wynn a little bit and then head all the way to the back, we should be able to find an exit on the back. So we hoofed it all the way to the back. And then all of the doors back there were alarmed. It was like, ah, rats. So we did find a very kind woman who was one of the staff there, and we said, is there any way back here to get out back here? And she said, no, there isn't. I said, okay, that's fine. No problem. She said, I'm really sorry. She says, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. In addition, there was no monorail stop at the back of the Wynn, even though the monorail goes right by there. So we got hoofed all the way back to the front of the Wynn, and then we hoofed it down behind the Imperial, and then followed the monorail tracks all the way back around to the nearest stop, which was near the Imperial. So we eventually got back onto the monorail. By this time, it was 9:15-ish or so. 9-ish, 9:15-ish. We had spent 3 hours just walking. And walking, you know, we were making some time. I mean, we weren't speed walking or anything, but we were walking at a pretty good clip. Well, being outside for all of that walking, you know, we'd worked up a sweat, so we finally got onto the monorail and into the air conditioning a little bit. And, you know, so we decided we'd just ride the monorail so that Charles could kind of see the rest of Vegas. And so we rode the monorail all the way up to the south end and then turned to, no, north end. And then we just rode it all the way back, all the way to MGM Grand. Got in his car. He took me to the airport. I was going to be a little bit early. I said, that's fine, just drop me off. I think by the time we made it to the airport, it was 10:15-ish, 10:20-ish, something like that. And said our goodbyes, gave him a hug, you know, told him I loved him, and told him I'd be praying for him. And so then I got in, got my ticket. Well, my plane was not going to leave until 12:50 a.m. local time, which was fine. I had stuff to read, so I went in and read for a little while, and then got myself a sandwich, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, by this time, it's 3:50. You know, by the time I get on the plane, it's actually almost 3 o'clock, according to my body clock. And I've been up since 6:30 that morning. I was starting to get tired. And I had decided, you know what? I am getting on this plane. I'm going to sleep. I'm going to say hello to the person that sits down next to me, but then I'm going to sleep. Normally, I do strike up a little more conversation. But I thought, well, I'm just going to go to sleep. Now then, I kind of knew at the time that that really wasn't how you treat people. You know, you be friendly, find out a little bit about them, chit-chat a little bit, and then, you know, you make them feel comfortable. And then go, but I decided, no, I'm just going to say hello, I'm going to sleep. Okay, well, that's flesh. So I get on this plane that's bound for Chicago, and it's pretty full. As it happens, the seat, the middle seat, is not taken on the threefer. I had gone into the threefer and gone against the window so that I could lean my head against the window and catch some sleep. I knew I wanted to do that early on. And so a guy sits down on the seat on the aisle, and I greet him. And I say, how are you, sir? Good. And that was pretty much it. You know, he pretty much went to sleep too. And they did turn down the light. So there would not have been much time to talk, but I still didn't avail myself of the opportunity. So we get into Chicago about 6:30. By this point, I have been up for 24 hours, aside from the few cat naps that I got on the plane. And I probably got 4 or 5 cat naps on the plane. Maybe for 15, 20 minutes. It was enough. I was functional. Not highly functional, but I was functional. I truck over because my plane's not leaving for another 2.5 hours or so. So I truck over, find out where the gate is, kind of get settled in. I'm getting my mail. Because my plan is that I'm going to... Oh, my wife must have gotten the mail already today. My plan is that I'm going to do a little reading, get something to eat, and then take my backpack, put it on my lap, lean into my backpack, try to catch a few more cat naps. So I'm a little still blitzed at this point. I'm sitting there. Who should walk into the waiting area and sit down a couple of rows over for me? But this guy. I thought, oh, come on, Phil. This guy who's sitting next to you on the plane, probably, I'm backing into my garage, probably the only guy on the plane who's going to Springfield, Missouri, and he's sitting next to me, and you didn't take the opportunity to talk to him. By this point, I was pretty blitzed. He was pretty blitzed. And so I smiled and nodded, and he kind of nodded. I took my cat naps. So then we got on the plane, and I smiled again, and we got on the plane, and I heard him talking a little bit. He had actually... it was his first time flying. Apparently, he had had a quick trip to go to Vegas. And, you know, obviously, I don't know any details because I didn't avail myself of the opportunity of talking to him. But that was fascinating. That was fascinating. I finally made it back into Springfield at noon. So by this time, aside from the cat naps, I was able to take some cat naps on the flight from Chicago because there was no one in the seat next to me. The plane was pretty empty, and so I was actually able to kind of lay down and get a little more quality cat naps. I probably had 2 or 3 more in the hour and a half flight. Made it back in at noon, did my grocery shopping, made my salad for the week, you know, got my clothes ready for the week, blah, 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 blah. Eventually got in bed at 10 at night. I didn't even set the alarm. I slept for about 10 hours. And I was a little bit dragged out on Monday. I was finally back to my old self by Tuesday, and my voice had kind of recovered. But it's just interesting. No matter when or where you allow the flesh to talk you into something, there's always going to be some failure of some point. And I feel like I really failed when it came to the opportunity to talk to that young man. But Jesus knows all these things. In addition to all that, I had something else that came up this week. I had an acquaintance that may be starting a new adventure in life. I may be assisting a little bit in it. And in trying to figure out how to create an environment of success for him in that, I was reflecting back on the trip. The thing about the trip that I made with Charles is that, first of all, it was a fast trip. It was tiring. We had a great time. We talked and talked and talked and listened to podcasts and talked and talked and talked. We just had a great time. Well, there were a number of things that made that possible. First of all, I have the financial wherewithal that if I want to, I can pick up and go on a trip and bless somebody on that trip by not only taking care of my own, you know, expenses, but his as well, as a way to just say, you know, here's a leg up. When you get out to California, you won't have to have spent this money. Maybe you can use it on other things, which might be good that I did, because he had only been out there for a couple of days and he'd already gotten 2 parking tickets. So maybe that's what the extra money went for. So I, first of all, had the financial wherewithal to do it. But second of all, I had the emotional wherewithal to do it and the depth of experience that we could travel along for 8 hours in a car together, 9 hours for a car together, 7 hours for a car together. And it was great. You know, we listened to stuff, we talked, no problems. It was great. And third of all, had the physical stamina to be able to make the trip. I mean, Charles is a young man. But I kept up with him. You know, it was fine. I did my share of the driving. When we wanted to go do something, I could hoof right along with him. We went to the Hoover Dam, and we walked downstairs, and there was this overpass that you had to walk up that to the middle of the bridge that we were walking to. It was over a mile in 107 degree heat. And to get to that bridge, you had to walk up this large staircase. It's fine. No problems. And in reflecting on all of that, and in reflecting on my acquaintance and the new direction that he's going in life, my concern for him is that he is going in a direction that is going to be physically demanding. And yet, for many years, he has not attempted at all to keep himself in some sort of functional physical shape. And in fact, the last time I saw him, he was looking tired, very tired. And aged. And over the next few days, as we converse about this opportunity, I'm going to do my best to try to find a way to create for him an environment of success. But sometimes if you dig yourself deep enough into the hole, you really just can't expect that you're able to jump and get out of it. Sometimes you have to fill the hole back in, and that takes time. And what I'm hoping is, if he decides to go forward with this opportunity, I'm hoping that the physical demands and his unpreparedness for those physical demands doesn't sabotage him. Because it very well might. But unfortunately, there's nothing I can do about that All I can do is make him aware of the possibility and say, if you're going down this path and you make this decision today, you have to understand that it's going to require resources that are not going to be able to be called on instantly. They are resources that you will only have because week after week, month after month, you've been preparing those resources so that when the moment comes, you're ready. And I'm happy to say, and I'm thrilled to say, and I'm grateful to say, that when Charles needed a driver, he could call me, and I knew that it was going to be fine. That I was emotionally equipped, I was already financially equipped, and I was already physically equipped to make it a great trip. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.